VOA.
Hello, I'm Lynn Okhmudu. Welcome to Health Chat. The demand for clean beauty products has increased tremendously in recent years worldwide. These are products that are created without potentially harmful chemicals. Observers say ingredients such as BPA and phthalates found in a variety of beauty products can have a negative impact on people's health and may lead to issues such as hormone disruptions and even cancer. For the past 17 years, a Washington state-based beauty company, Alafia, has been providing American consumers with beauty and personal care products with ingredients grown in Africa. Described as a clean, green, and fair trade beauty company, Alafia was created by Togolese native Olowunjo Chala with a mission to cultivate beauty, equality, and empowerment in West Africa through the fair trade and of indigenous resources and community empowerment projects. In an exclusive interview, I caught up with Olowunjo Chala to discuss how Alafia's products are contributing to women's wellness and beyond. Take a listen.
Mr. Olowunjo Chala, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you. I'm happy to be here.
It's great to have you. Listen, you founded a company called Alafia about 17 years ago, and it's described as a clean, green, and free trade company, a beauty company. Talk to us about Alafia.
Obviously, the fair trade aspects are important. But the specifics here for Alafia is the use of centuries old and that we have within our continent. When I say century old, it means that something that worked well in our skin for quite a long time. Our mothers, our sisters, our brothers have used, in this case, shea butter for a long time. So for me, it's providing to the world an ingredient and a product that we know work well on the body. But even more importantly, I think is this product are embodying our indigenous way of life.
What inspired you to start Alafia, and what does it mean?
As many people around the west part of Africa and me coming from Togo, we use Alafia as a greeting. And Alafia is a state of peace, health and peace. And I think that is what I'm striving to do. In order to reduce poverty and the suffering of the people, we need to have peace and health. And so I also feel that Alafia need to embody the best of the best of Africa. And therefore, the name of an organization that is a global organization need to embody an African name.
You chose to use beauty and personal care products as a business venture to show part of the best of Africa and to bring about change. Why did you focus on that aspect?
I believe, despite, as you mentioned, the various unpleasant news that we hear about Africa, Africa is a beautiful place. I just want to confirm that. I chose personal care product for two simple reasons. One, we have the skills on how to use it. In the DNA of Alafia is what do we know how to use, how to do, that we're not importing a knowledge from America or from Europe. We already know how to make shea butter. We know how to make coconut oil. And also is about what I wanted to do something that at the end of the day is preserving our culture. And when I look, I feel that within the personal care, what we have it does preserve our culture. But additionally, it is something that the world needs. Today, we forget Africa can produce products that are natural. The world is shifting away from chemical-based products. So using a natural ingredient that we have indigenous way of making it, it simply just made sense to me. But also, it was feasible. When we started Alafia, Alafia was not started for the intentions of self-accumulations of income or wealth. It was about to do good in the community. And because of that, you have to be reasonable in choosing something that you can actually do.
Your company is known as a fair trade beauty company, as we mentioned earlier. What does fair trade mean? Help us to understand that concept in this context. What does it entail?
In some ways, to me, fair trade is opposite of the colonialism, right? The essence of colonialism is let's take the product or the raw materials or the knowledge for as cheap or free. And so what fair trade is saying is, let's compensate a fair living wages for the product or the knowledge, and most importantly, let's provide safe working environment for those who engage in creating the product. But when it comes to Alafia, for instance, it's really ensuring that fair living wages are compensated to those who are making the product. For instance, in Togo, in one of Alafia centers, the women's get paid 4 times the local wage, because you got to pay people enough to be able to send their children to school. But I think there's an aspect that's equally important. Fair trade is also ensuring that the primary ingredient is paid at a fair value that the person can sustain their life on it. As you know, many of our communities, 70% of our communities still live in rural area in Western Africa today. And their livelihood is based on either farming or collecting things from the wild. So we must pay them a fair price for what they're collecting or what they're farming.
Talk to us about some of the products in your brand. I know you mentioned shea butter, coconut oil. What are they specifically? How do you choose them? Why did you choose them?
It's not so much about the choice, it's the understanding of also what the world consumer, what do America wants to consume? Because it doesn't do us any good to try to alleviate poverty or to create a product that customers won't buy. Is we have to understand that. We have to be relevant to the marketplace. And that relevancy to the marketplace, it means that we can take the diverse ingredients from moringa, from shea, from coconut oil, from baobab oil, from neem, all those various ingredients that we have in abundance. And based on what the consumers need on the skin types, we create the product. And what is also important is creating a diverse form of product. Alafia has 190 different products.
You have a lot of charity projects, and most of your charity projects are tailored towards the needs of women and children. Is there a particular reason for your interest in this demographic?
First of all, let's put the study aside. The study clearly points out investing in women and the return is greater as far as Africans are concerned. But for me, it's personal. The personal part is because I've seen the suffering of my own mother. I've seen my sisters have to leave Togo, going to Nigeria to go look for work. I see what it takes for women in our villages, how long it takes to go get the water, how long it takes to go find the firewood. So, and I myself was one of those kids, right? So I understand the suffering of our people, and most in particular, because I see what my sisters and my mother has gone through. So it makes sense that when I become an adult, that's where you invest. You invest in something that touches your heart, because that's your family. But you can't only invest just in your family. We have to invest in the Pan-Africanism. We have to invest in the entire continent. We have to invest beyond our own village and beyond our own ethnic.
And speaking of investment, what advice would you give people who would like to engage in doing business from Africa to the United States? The kind of business model that you've adopted, what would you say?
There must be a reason why the product exists in the first place. Because see, there's two things. there's a product and the reason for it to be. And I think entrepreneurs in our communities throughout Africa, the reason to be is critical. For instance, for Alafia's reason to be is so that we can get people out of poverty by providing jobs and investing back in the community and preserving our cultural knowledge. That creates a market differentiation. Simply having a product is not enough. How are you going to be different on the shelf or an e-commerce platform? So your reason to be is critical. And I think the advice for me should be that I want to do this because I can serve a community. And it's fine if you just want to make money, but I can tell you from the past 18 years, you can make money and you can also serve your community. As far as the US is concerned in advice, it is understanding, is this a product that Americans want to consume? Is it relevant to American psychology? If it is not, then there's no reason to put it in that market. And then you got to think about other markets that what you have to offer. And I understand that there are regulations and sometimes people may feel intimidated by American regulation. All I can tell you is that the regulations in America are less than regulations in Togo. So it's quite possible. And I would say start small and don't give up.
What about the perception that products that come from the African continent do not compete when it comes to quality?
Well, clearly we have a lot of misconception when it comes to our continent. And that is a misconception. The Alafia product are within the top five brand within the natural food industry in America. And clearly those are all African-based products. So I'm convinced that we can override the misconception. But we have to do a lot of work. And I think what is important in this misconception is that we don't explain why are we different. We need to explain more that we are offering something unique to the world, not that the world is offering something unique to us. We need to change our psychological ourselves. Once we change this, our own psychological base, that with confidence that what I have is unique and you, the world, don't have it, therefore, you gotta have this.
So Alafia has championed and funded initiatives in maternal health care, education, reforestation, and regenerative agriculture. Can you please tell us about some of these projects you embark on?
We need to approach it comprehensively. We cannot simply just do environment and ignore education. So that is why Alafia looks at the community investment as an ecosystem so that we're touching all the drivers of the society. Because the driver of the society is quite simple, really. It's job creation and investment in the social activities that will drive the economy of the future. So in order to drive the economy of the future, we need to invest in education. But also, those community projects are personal to me. And let's start with maternal health. You know, in maternal health, there's a practice that we know in our communities as FGM. My mother went through it. I have a sister that went through it. And I was the boy that carried the bucket of water when the woman had been cut. I have witnessed what we do in our community. So it makes sense that Alafia will invest in maternal care. I have lost sisters myself because they can't spend $10 to buy antibiotic after the infection of giving birth. And an average 1 in 16 woman would die in sub-Saharan Africa by trying to give birth. Those numbers are similar to the death rate in the U.S. back in the late 1700s. So it don't make sense. But the Alafia's investment goes beyond than my own personal feelings about the need to support maternal care. It's also because it reduces poverty. We know clearly that when we lose a mother, the other siblings are going to drop out the school. So if Alafia's intention is to reduce poverty, then we need to keep our mothers alive. And I think it's a moral thing to do anyway.
And speaking of women, you've worked in other West African countries apart from your home country, Togo. What was the experience of working with women from different ethnic backgrounds?
That's the challenge, right? That's the work. If it was easy, then it could just be done overnight. We wouldn't be having this conversation. I think fundamentally is using the same principles that Lafia used in Togo. You engage with the communities, either in Burkina Faso or in Ghana or in Ivory Coast, with respect and in respect of inclusion, right? Where you're engaging with the community that I'm not here to change your ethnicity, to change your culture, but first is to understand. And most importantly, what does the community need? Right. So I think the idea of inclusion is really important. And I think our diversity that we have throughout the continent, we should use that as our strength.
So what are some of the challenges you often encounter? You spoke about some of them already, but talk to us about this experience as an entrepreneur, as an African native, as someone who is importing in the U.S.
I call it regional integration. It is fundamental to our economic growth. And our economic growth, part of it depends on our ability to export around the world from Africa. So, and I can tell you right now, I work in multiple countries in Africa, and just crossing the borders are not easy, right? So we before we even talk about how do we sell a product in America, is how are we selling product to each other, and how are we driving our own local economies within the neighboring countries at the ease that makes it possible. And right now, it has never been easy in terms of. So we need regional integration, and I meant both in logistics and banking. I think the enforcement of contract is very important, because in a business, you need to feel safe that a contract that I have with you can be enforced in the court. And that gives you the confidence to have it been binding and to invest. And if we cannot have faith in our court systems, and I say systems, I'm not pointing only one country out, then it's difficult to be able to engage and want to invest. But as you said earlier, an advice for those perhaps that want to invest in Africa, I don't say this to deter anybody around the world with good intention that want to invest in Africa. It is a challenge. Part of entrepreneurship is to overcome the challenge and to work with the challenge and to change what is not working and to speak about what is not working to our leaders around the world, and particularly in Africa, so that we can make it more possible to do business.
What are some of the takeaways from this experience with Alafia? And what would you describe as the most satisfying achievement of your work?
Right, I have a long way to go. And I cannot claim an achievement on my own. Certainly, there's many people within the Lafia family that have contributed to where we are today, and we're blessed and humbled by it. But if I were to point out an achievement, I think two things, not just a single. We take a Togo, for instance. Outside Lomé, Alafia is the longest and the majority woman-run enterprise. Most of our organizations die within 2 years. We're on our 18th year, and we're still there today. But I think it's also for me to demonstrate to the world that Africa and African-based ingredients and African-derived fundamental knowledge has the right to play with the big guys on American shelves, and we do.
When we talk about social responsibility in retail, what do you see as the future of social responsibility?
I think the social responsibility goes hand in hand with the appetite, at least in America, and really, frankly, in Europe as well, for consuming natural products. Right, because social responsibility really focuses about the ethics that governs or how you may spend the results that you derive from the, your economic activity, or how you run your organization. But to me, when we look as we go in the future, the social responsibility becomes even more critical. And I believe that Africa is very well positioned to be part of that growth in the future. For one, we have a product, we can make products that are natural to begin with. That is what the world wants to consume. We need to invest in our communities. We need to be socially responsible entrepreneurs because our community needs us, right? And if we cannot wait for somebody else to come and solve our own problem, we've got to be solving our own, the problems that we have. And so those two things, if you put it together, I think that there's a great chance for us to uplift ourselves. But in, as far as retail is concerned, in America, social responsibility will become almost a requirement to play.
Olowo Njo Chala, thank you so much for your time.
Thank you.
That was Olonjo Chala, founder and...
Hi, I'm Kim Lewis, moderator for Issues in the News. Join me and a panel of journalists as we discuss the latest top stories of the week, including a bipartisan report issued on the investigation of the January 6th attack on the U.S. Capitol found a number of intelligence and security failures. Listen to Issues in the News this Saturday and Sunday on The Voice of America.
Welcome back to Health Chat. The Burkina Faso-developed malaria vaccine is not the only solution to the mosquito-borne disease being tested in the country. Scientists in the West African nation have been breeding genetically modified mosquitoes that may reduce the ability of mosquito populations to spread malaria. Henry Wilkins reports from Bobo Julasso on Burkina Faso's cutting-edge research.
Laurent Sorge, the head of the Burkina Faso delegation of the International Committee for the Red Cross, said the organization responded Sunday morning to a request for medical supplies, noting local hospitals are overwhelmed.
Upon request for support by the health authorities in Dori, we sent half a ton of medical support, mainly dressing, medicaments, sets of plasters, syringes, and anesthetic, which was really important to be sent with no delay.
Dori is a town in northern Burkina Faso. The attack happened overnight Friday at the village of Solhan, located in the Yaga province in the country's Sahel region. The extent of the carnage is not known because the number of dead and injured continues to rise. No group has claimed responsibility for the attack, although analysts say it could be the work of Islamic State in the Greater Sahara. The attack is the deadliest since the conflict between Burkina Faso and armed groups linked to Al-Qaeda and the Islamic State group began in 2015. The violence follows a period of relative calm. Between March 2020 and April 2021, the number of attacks in Burkina Faso fell dramatically. Since the beginning of April, seven major attacks have come in quick succession. On May 17th, Burkina Faso's foreign minister, Sheriff Sy, visited Sabah, the nearest town to Solhan. He said the situation in Sabah was favourable and that peace had returned to the area. Mohamedou Sawadogo is a Burkinabe security analyst and former military police officer. Sawadogo said one could see this attack as a show of force, a demonstration of power by terrorist armed groups. He said that today they have shown they control the province of Yaga, and particularly the area of Solhan that they have been trying to conquer since 2020. Solhan is also the site of an informal gold mine that terror groups frequently exploit for funding. The military in Burkina Faso is under-resourced and is finding it impossible to provide security in all regions of the country, despite assistance from French and US troops. Lassane Sawadogo is the General Secretary of the Ruling People's Movement for Progress Party and says that, nonetheless, the government will do what it can. He says he has no doubt that at the government level and at the level of the defence and security forces, initiatives will be implemented quickly to put an end to this spiral of insecurity, which is stretching its evil wings on this part of the country. Aside from the number of people killed, the humanitarian aftermath could also be significant. There are already 1.2 million displaced in the country. Marine Olivesi is an advocacy manager for the Norwegian Refugee Council in Ouagadougou.
Beyond the sheer death toll, there are other counts to keep. How many families are going to be forced into displacement as a result of this attack? For how many weeks, months, years? And on top of that, there are things you can't quantify, but that are just as daunting. The trauma children bear, the fear of not knowing where to go to keep them safe, the stress of having to find a place to sleep or enough to eat. That's the kind of fallout we're looking at here.
Apart from a statement on Twitter, the president, Roch Kabore, has yet to speak publicly about the attack. A United Nations spokesperson said Secretary General Antonio Guterres voiced outrage over the killings. The spokesperson cited Guterres as saying the incident underscores the urgent need for the international community to redouble support to member states in the fight against violent extremism and its unacceptable human toll. Henry Wilkins for VOA News, Ouagadougou, Burkina Faso.
Here in the United States, the White House has announced it will deliver the bulk of its first 25 million donated doses of COVID-19 vaccine through COVAX, the United Nations-backed program delivering vaccines to low- and middle-income countries. That's according to a White House announcement on Thursday. It's part of a down payment on a pledge to donate 80 million doses by the end of June. The Biden administration has been under pressure to share its vaccine supply. VOA's Steve Bragona has more.
Three-quarters of the first 25 million vaccine doses that the United States is donating will go through the United Nations COVAX program.
5% of these vaccines through COVAX. This will maximize the number of vaccines available equitably for all countries and will facilitate sharing with those most at risk.
Another 6 million doses will go to individual countries, including neighbors, allies, and countries with surges or other crises. The United States has pledged to donate 80 million doses in all by the end of June.
By the end of June. This is five times the number of doses any other country has committed to sharing. And these 80 million doses represent 13% of the total vaccines produced by the United States by the end of this month.
But while 80 million doses will help, experts say the world is billions of doses short of what it will take to control the pandemic.
So 25 million doses, yes, a step in the right direction, but really a drop in the bucket to what the global need is.
While more than half the U.S. population is vaccinated, access to COVID-19 vaccines has been wildly unequal worldwide.
Zones. But of the 1.8 billion vaccines administered globally, just 0.4% have been administered in low-income countries. This is ethically, epidemiologically, and economically unacceptable.
Experts say wealthier countries need to step up their donations, plus help build manufacturing capacity around the world. That will take time. One bright spot is that there are still new vaccines in development that may help fulfill the world's needs, Moss says.
We'll be able to improve access. We won't just be working with the current kind of portfolio of vaccines. We'll have new vaccines come along, and hopefully they'll be as safe and effective as our current ones.
The WHO this week authorized the vaccine from Sinovac, which is already in use in Brazil, Indonesia, and elsewhere. That clears the way for uptake in more countries. Steve Barragona, VOA News.
That's all for this edition of Health Chat. For the latest news and coverage on the coronavirus pandemic, visit voanews.com. Check us out at facebook.com/VOA Health Chat, and let's keep the conversation going. Thank you all for joining us, and special thanks to all our affiliate stations throughout Africa for carrying Health Chat. I'm your host, Linor Mudo, in Washington, with producer Dan Brown. Until next time, take care, stay safe, and wash your hands more frequently, and strive to make every day a healthy day.
Sporty greetings to all our Voice of America listeners. This is VOA's Sonny Young, host of the Sunny Side of Sports. Tune in, right?
right here, Mondays through Fridays at 16:30 and 18:30 UTC for an action-packed 30-minute program of African, American, and international sports.